Hey guys, it's Wendy. I'm back with another episode of Show Up or Shut Up with Wendy Solganic, and I thought I had had all of my technical glitches worked out, and then I decided to record this episode using a different recording device. I actually had tested it and it seemed like it was working great, and then after I recorded this episode and I went to edit it, I found out that it didn't work as great as I thought it was working. So please just listen anyway. It's imperfect, just like our art journal pages. And I hope you really enjoy it because I know that I really enjoyed getting to know our next guest a lot better than I previously knew her. So here's the next episode of Show Up or Shut Up. Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up with Wendy Solganic, also known as Willa.Wanders on Instagram. This podcast features real and raw conversation about the lives of prolific makers. What is really happening behind all of those gorgeous photos of art on Instagram? How we came to be prolific makers? What makes us consistently show up? And the very real challenges that we all face. This episode of Show Up or Shut Up is brought to you by my online course, the Willa Journals course. Learn everything you need to know to make one-of-a-kind, bespoke, mixed-media mashup journals. And by the Bookmaker Collective. Discover your bookmaker confidence as you learn new bookmaking techniques or reimagine old ones while creating and constructing artisan books from start to finish during online, weekend-long live workshop experiences. Our guest today on Show Up or Shut Up is Tiffany Sharp. Tiffany enjoys making books and sharing her love of art with others. She learned the joy of crafting at an early age and continued to quilt and knit as she taught high school chemistry and middle school science. It was not until later in life that Tiffany discovered her love of watercolor and mixed media. Like many others, she found that making and working in art journals was a therapeutic way to express her creativity during the pandemic. Tiffany was born in South Korea and raised in Colorado. She now lives in Minnesota with her husband and two children. They enjoy spending time on nature walks and simple family dinners together.
Hello, Tiffany.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm very good. Welcome to the Show Up or Shut Up podcast.
Yay!
Thank you for coming on. You have been my most reluctant guest to date, but we're going to break through whatever resistance and shyness you have.
Well, and it's not... I'm excited. I'm super excited. It's just the whole recording, you know?
Well, FYI, can be edited, although I tend to do very little editing. My episodes haven't needed tons of editing, so...
Well, you never know.
You never
know.
Be
the one.
So let's introduce you to the audience of listeners of Show Up or Shut Up, which is a group of wonderful human artists, and they love listening, and they love being introduced to different artists from all over the world. So tell me, where do you live?
I live in Minnesota. I've been here for about 6 years in central Minnesota, but I've been in Minnesota for 10 years, I think, which is a long time for me.
And you've lived, I think I remember you've lived in a lot of other places.
I have. Do you want to know all the places?
I think that would be great. I think people
Okay.
can really connect with that because, you know, they'll hear like the place they're from and it gets really exciting.
Yeah, so I was born in Korea, near Seoul, South Korea. And I was adopted when I was 8. And then I lived in Colorado. I grew up in Colorado until the year 2000. I went to school in Denver. I got married, and then my husband, he was my high school sweetheart. We got married after he graduated from the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and then they started moving us around. So the first place we went to was Washington State. We lived near Tacoma. We were supposed to be there for 2 years. It turned out to be 3 because he ended up being deployed. It was the year after September 11th. So he was deployed for a few months when we were supposed to have moved. And then, so that put us there for 3 years. Then we moved to Germany, and the overseas assignments were 3 years. So we lived there. Where did we go from there? We went to Virginia for 2 years. Yep, for 2 years. And then he got out of the Air Force then. And his first job after that took us to Texas. And it was only supposed to be like a 6 month training. He was in the eyeglass industry. So just starting out, he was supposed to train there for about 6 months. And it turned out to be a year and a half to 2 years, I think. So Texas, then North Carolina for 2 years. Then, no, I'm forgetting one. We
This
went
is
to
an
the
unbelievable story.
I know. So we went to Mississippi. So after we moved to Washington, he had training in Mississippi for 4 months. And we actually did move there because I was like, we are just married. I don't know anyone here in Washington. We're just going to move down there for 4 months. So we did do that. And then, okay, so then North Carolina, then Minnesota. I think that's
Wow. So
it.
are you very good at making new friends because you have lived a lot of different places?
Yeah, well, when you move around with the military, they are so great about setting you up with other people whose main job is just to help you out and to get you settled. They'll even help you find a house. I mean, the best example of that was when we moved to Germany. You move, and then about 3 or 4 months later, you get all of your things, like all of your furniture and your car. You don't even have a car for about a month or two. So these sponsors, they'll like lend you their car. They'll be like, yeah, I don't know, our sponsor, his wife was also in the military who was deployed. So he was like, my wife's not using her car, just use it for a month or two until you get yours. And that's just, you make friends really quickly, and everyone knows that you're going to be leaving soon. So that's kind of what we're used to.
Wow, but that you have the place you live now, you have lived for about a decade.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, our house now, we've lived in for 6 years, and we lived about an hour away from here, closer to the Minneapolis area before that. So yeah, about 6 years here. And I mean, it's different because we're not on a military base. It has been tougher to make friends. It's kind of slower here because people have their family connections, I think. There seems to be a lot of, like people with their kids, but then they also have their extended family. Some are very close. And I've seen a lot of people who live in Minnesota, they'll move away and then they'll come back. That seems to happen a ton. So,
Interesting.
yeah.
And when did you start making art? Was it something that you always did, and then as an adult in all of these different places that you lived, or is making art something that's relatively new for you?
Well, I think it depends on what you call what you consider art, because I've always done crafts. So my mom taught me how to do cross stitch when I was pretty young, maybe 9 or 10 years old, and I did that a lot. And she would sew with me. We did like two or three sewing projects, which I loved. She knits and crochets, and I learned it, but I didn't make anything at the time. Wasn't until I got older and started traveling around, I got into quilting when I was in the military because I don't know, a lot of people were doing it and there were classes, so I took a class. I learned how to quilt and got into that.
That's so interesting. Quilting is such a traditional Americana type of craft. Not surprised that being a military family, that was something that you were exposed to and kind of turned on to
Right. It
during
just
that
seemed.
experience.
Yeah, it seemed to be on every base we went to, there was always a group of quilters that I could, meet with and, get together and do quilting when our husbands were traveling or whatever. So,
So were you like, did you end up becoming very knowledgeable about traditional quilting methods?
yeah, a little bit. I did some hand piecing, which is extremely difficult. I don't know why I
Whoa.
started that way, but I hand pieced quilts before I had a sewing machine. And
That
then,
is
yeah.
extreme
Yeah,
tediousness.
it was. I don't know why I wanted to do that, but I did. I definitely started out like the old school way first. I didn't make any full size quilts, just
That
a
is
few patches.
really cool. That is really, really cool, though. Like, really cool. Okay. So, all right. So, I didn't realize that you had a quilting background, but it's kind of making more sense now. I'm going to probably learn a lot about you. Okay. So, quilting, and then what?
Then when I had kids, my first, well, both kids, they had colic and they had a hard time sleeping. And so a lot of times, a lot of nights, and even during nap times, I would have to just sit in the room with them and wait for them to fall asleep. And I'm not talking like 15 minutes, it was hours. It's just like hours that I would have to sit in a dark room. So then
Were you
I was like, I
holding them? Were you like holding them on your
yeah,
chest and
sometimes,
kind of bouncing them for
yeah. So
hours?
sometimes I was holding them, and then as they got a little bit older, maybe like 1 or 2 years old, they would lay there. It was my daughter. She would lay there in her crib. She would not be able to fall asleep unless I was in the room. And so I would just sit in there. And then I was like, what am I doing? I can't. I was never a person just to sit. So I was like, I'm gonna look into knitting again. And I hadn't done that since I was a little girl. So I think I just got on the internet or something. It was quite a long time ago, but there were a few pictures and kind of step-by-step instructions that I picked up and kind of remembered and retaught myself how to knit. So I would just knit while she was falling asleep.
How old
And
is your
She's 14 now.
Okay, so this is 14 years ago.
Yep, so
So you
14
are a
years ago.
very crafty person.
Yes. Yeah,
Okay.
I've always done. I have to stay busy with my hands. So yeah,
Okay.
I did knitting, and then I got into serious knitting. I mean, like some serious, you can spend some serious money on
Yes, you
like
can.
luxury yarns.
Yes.
I think I have mink yarn. I haven't used it yet, but
Wow.
yeah, I looked through my stash of yarn the other day. I'm slowly giving it to my mom because she's still doing some knitting. And I was like, why do I have this mink yarn? What did I think I was going to use it for? It's, I don't know, but
Isn't that like
yeah.
three quarters of the stuff we own as crafters? You look back on it and you're like, what did I think I was going to use this for?
Yeah,
And it just
why did I
sits
have to
there.
have this?
But that's just part of the whole thing. I can't explain it, but it's universal. It's not just you. It's not just me. It's like everyone who does crafts just kind of has a massive collection situation.
Right. Well, and it's like I have the collection of yarn. I had the yarn
Yes.
stash, but previously I had a fabric stash.
Yes.
And
Because of
so
the
every,
quilting, right? Because of the quilting.
yeah. And I got into scrapbooking, of course.
Of course.
So, I have a
There's
huge paper
no
stash.
one that I interviewed that didn't have like a major thing like episode.
Yeah. Oh,
So,
I
all right,
was
how did that
seriously.
happen and what specifically, like what? Because depending on the era that you came to scrapbooking, I think scrapbooking had some major phases of its evolution. So, like there's
Okay.
people who did digital scrapbooking, which I never did. All right,
Right.
so tell me about your scrapbooking.
Okay. So I was introduced to scrapbooking when I was in the military in Germany because we were going to all these countries. I mean, they were like right there. I was 20 minutes away when I lived in Germany from France. We would just like hop over to France and go shopping and, go see all the castles. It was like an hour away. And so when we did all these things, we would take a ton of pictures, and then I got into scrapbooking with Creative Memories. So that was like, what, 2003, around there that I started scrapbooking. And then of course when my kids were born, when my daughter was born, I was really big into it, and I made huge scrapbooks with all her pictures in it every year. And then when my son was born 4 years later, I think I made one. Well, I know, poor kid. I was really busy with the
Right. I mean, it's like
two
you can only really
kids.
truly do heavy scrapbooking when you have one child, right? So that
Yeah.
one child, the oldest child, has volumes and volumes of
Yes.
scrapbooks because, of course, when they nap, you can scrapbook. And what else are you going to do? You're housebound. You're not, it's
Yep.
like you're so that is so funny. I have so many scrapbooks for my older daughter, my oldest daughter, and then nothing for any kid after that.
Yeah, and I think that happens to everyone. And I remember hearing about this while I was scrapbooking for my daughter, and I was like, I'm never gonna be like that. That's just so unfair.
So they were not digital because this was still like pre the digital scrapbooking age. They were.
Well, I did do some digital. I did start a little bit of digital, but I didn't enjoy it. I really liked to actually physically work with the paper. So I tried, but I was like, I don't know about that. So.
So interesting. So then you had your son. Of course, then your scrap, then you start feeling the guilt because all your scrapbook supplies are sitting there and nothing's happening with them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's when I got into knitting, because I could sit and watch him play or whatever, and I was in the room and I could do the knitting again. So I got into that again, And then it wasn't until later that I did like painting type of art or, mixed media and that kind of stuff.
Well, that's it's almost kind of like you, it is like a bit of a requirement that your kids have to be older for you to start dabbling in mixed media. Like, it's incredible how similar the patterns are. I mean, I also scrapbooked when my kids were little, and then it transitioned into knitting when my second child was born, and I was knitting like crazy when my second child was born. And then by the time my third child was born, I was doing zero like crafting. I mean, I was working full time, but I was zero crafts. And then it wasn't until they were all self-sufficient that suddenly mixed media became even a possibility.
I wonder why. I mean, is it because you had to be in your own room or like a studio to do it, or is there
Probably.
any?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it's, you know, I was talking to Mary Beth Shaw today, actually, on the phone from Stencil Girl, and she was telling me that she is in her early 60s, and she was like, "You're younger than me, aren't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, well, I'm 50. I'm not so young, but okay, I'm a little younger than you." And we were kind of like talking about the whole age thing and about, you know, whether or not there are younger people, like let's say 30, 35-year-olds, doing mixed media. So, do you mind divulging your age?
Nope, I'm 45.
Okay, you look so young. I would have thought you were 35. Okay, so you're 45. That's so interesting. So I just wonder if mixed media is something that is attractive to people as they get older for some reason. Like, you know, first of all, it's mostly women. There's almost no men who are involved in mixed media. I mean, there's a handful, but there's not a lot. So it's heavily female, and it heavily skews toward 45 and older.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it ha some of it has to do with like, I feel like quilting and knitting are all, you have to be really precise. And I was really into following the pattern. Well, I mean, with quilting, I wasn't into following the pattern, but I was into making up my own pattern and like doing the math and getting the precise, quarter inch measurements and all that stuff. And I don't want to do a lot of that anymore now. I just want to like play again and not have to be so precise in my, calculating things and
Maybe
just.
that plays into it in some way, in some subconscious way, that, you know, women just get to a place in their life where they are ready to let go of all of the pressure and the precision of the demands of life. And then all of a sudden, it's like something that's, I mean, even the difference between mixed media art and scrapbooking, the type of creative memory scrapbooking that we did, that was a lot more precise.
Yeah, it was.
And now it's like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's just a trend or it has something to do with age, but the desire to be more expressive, looser, freer, messier, I don't know. I really don't know. So, okay, so this is so fascinating. You have had quite a history with crafts. And okay, so then what happens? All right, so where did we leave off? We were at knitting again.
Yep, so I was knitting again, and actually I did that. So I moved here 6 years ago and I was still knitting. And oh, what happened was I was sitting so long that I started having neck and back pains. So, I had to stop knitting because I just couldn't. I don't know if my posture was really bad while I was knitting or what it was, but I just had to stop because it was just not not healthy for me to just sit in. I mean, and I normally don't. The only reason why I got into it was because I had to sit with my babies, and they were all grown up. And so I one day came across an ad for watercolor, and I was like, that looks interesting. I had never had any interest in painting or watercolor or anything like that before, but I was like, my kids are old enough, they could probably do some watercolor art with me. So we got a couple of kits and we tried it out, and I loved it. I was like, I don't know why I've never tried this, but it was just a lot of fun. And it was a kind of a challenge too. I don't know. Watercolor is just not something that I don't know if anyone just gets it right away. I was using way too much water. Things just weren't looking like how I wanted them to look. So it took a lot of practice. And that's the kind of things that I'm drawn to is if it's a little bit challenging, it's great. But if it's a lot challenging and I have to really work at it, then I'm like, yeah, I really like that.
Fascinating.
Yeah, so I started that just, I think it was only 2 years ago. I was looking at some of the first watercolors I did. It says 2019, so
I mean,
I
I
was
wouldn't be
only
surprised. There's been such profound proliferation of watercolor art, both examples, on Instagram and Pinterest and all of that stuff. And then also the proliferation of teachers teaching courses in watercolor that have made watercolor art a lot more accessible than it ever was before.
Yeah, I think a lot of it came in a kit, so I could just buy it and not have to worry about, oh, what kind of brushes do I need and what color paints and all that. So it was easy to try. So I think that's why I did it, because otherwise I would have gone down the paint aisle and been completely lost. It's not a place that I had found myself in before. So, yeah, so that's kind of where I started, art, like painting. I don't know if it's called fine art, but this type of art, not the craft type of art, I guess. I don't know. I think it's all art, but
Yeah,
there's definitely a
I don't think it
difference,
makes a
right?
difference. Well, I don't think it makes a
Okay.
difference what you
No,
call it. I
okay.
mean, it's such a continuum, right? It's
Yeah.
a lot of watercolor that I think is the type of watercolor that I painted and that you paint that heavily fall into the craft type of art. I mean, to me, art with a capital A or fine art is it's more about the intention behind what you're making. This is at least my personal definition. It's just more about the intention behind it more than it is about the methods or what you're producing. So for me, I've always distinguished art or fine art from craft by saying that fine art is something where the person who's creating it has something that they're trying to express to the world, like a story, a narrative, a feeling, something, versus a decorative art, which is like primarily about how attractive it is or pretty it is. And how like anything that you could put on a functional object because it would add to how pretty it is. And that would include knitting and crocheting and quilting and all of those things. There's a functionality to it. And it could cross into like decorative art, like if you think about folk art, which is, people for hundreds and hundreds of years painting on pottery or painting on, all these different things, these folk art motifs, And they were repetitive and they're pretty and they're not, necessarily like an artist with a lot of angst needing to get out their emotions, like a Picasso or something like that. So I definitely have always fallen really heavily into the decorative arts. And that's why I don't consider myself to be an artist with a capital A, because I'm not necessarily trying to express some, deep-seated pain or some, thing. I mean, sometimes I can have a little crossover depending on like what my, book art takes me into, but for the most part, I really just like making attractive things.
Yeah, I'm the same. I would definitely consider myself a crafter. I was, when I started watercoloring, I was like, I think this is art. I think I can consider myself an artist. I remember actually saying that, when I was doing watercolor. And my family was like, yeah, you're doing art. So, and I mean, honestly, if my family thinks I'm making great things and I'm doing art, they actually think I'm pretty famous too.
That is
So,
so adorable.
I'm like, yeah, I'm and honestly, like, that just makes me the happiest. I'm like, yeah, I'm famous. I was famous when I had 300 followers on Instagram.
Oh, I
According to them,
love that.
it was great. I was like, yeah.
Look, I think if you want, if you feel good, if it makes you comfortable, if you feel great, and you want to say, like, I'm an artist. Like, I have no problem calling myself an artist. If people ask me what I do, I say, I'm an artist. But truly, in my heart, I'm very proud of being a craftsperson. Like, very, very proud of that. I have never thought, I have never, ever, ever felt demeaned or diminished by my choice of profession in life as being that of a craftsperson.
No, me either. I loved all the crafts that I did for, whatever reason. It was all, most of it was just to keep myself busy. So I loved everything about whatever I did for all those reasons. Kept me busy.
I think it was probably challenging. I think that you probably took pride in making something that was really attractive. I mean, I can definitely see it in your work now that you have, a knack for making things that are really attractive. And it's challenging to make things that are really attractive.
Yeah, there's definitely challenge to a lot of things that I do that, like, the minute that I don't feel like it's challenging enough, I'm like, well, I kind of get bored. And
Me too.
that could be, maybe that's why I jump from one thing to the other, because I've done that a lot and I'm like, maybe I should just stick to one thing and use up all the supplies I have.
I don't think it's possible. Like, I honestly think like you could spend the rest of your life beating yourself up over the fact that after you master something, you're ready to move on. Or you could just say, this is who I am. I accept myself for who I am and move on when you're ready to move on. Okay. Did you want to say
The
something about that?
funny thing is, I had put all of my scrapbook stuff, all of my papers, my punches, all of that stuff I had put into these boxes, and I was getting ready to sell it in a big garage sale I was gonna have because I was done with paper crafts. I knew I was done with it. I needed to clean it out. So then the pandemic hit and we weren't going to do a garage sale. It was going to be a huge neighborhood garage sale. And everyone said, no, we can't do that. So then I was like, well, I don't know what to do. And it turned out that I ended up having a bunch of time on my hands. And I started bringing it all back into my craft room, like piece by piece. Oh, yeah, I could use that pattern paper for something. I'd tear it up and put it into like a junk journal or whatever. So
Well, so
I'm
hold on.
really.
You're totally skipping ahead, because
Oh, okay.
you
I'm
cannot just go
sorry.
from your knitting to like your junk journaling.
Junk
I need to
journal.
know exactly
Well,
what happened in between.
oh,
Oh, right, you were
let me think
watercoloring.
about it. Yeah, so I was watercoloring, and I don't know when the jump came.
Well, how did
Oh,
you even find out
I
about art
know.
journaling? Like, where did
Okay,
this whole thing come?
so
Okay.
I watercolored for a year, and then a year after that, I heard about art journaling. And it was with the same company, Let's Make Art, that did the watercolor kits. They said they're going to put out a thing that's art journaling. And I was like, I don't know what art journaling is. I'm going to figure this out. So then I was like, oh, that looks a lot like scrapbooking that I used to do. And I can use some of my papers. So that was like right before the pandemic. And the program hadn't even started yet, but I was going on vacation and I was like, I need to take pictures and do kind of a scrapbooking thing anyway. I'm gonna try out this art journaling thing. So I just looked up some YouTube videos and just did like kind of put together in my own mind what I thought it was gonna be.
Were you
And I
looking
didn't.
on Instagram for the hashtag like
No.
art journal or art
No, I
journaling?
didn't. I don't think I even was on Instagram then. And if I was, I didn't look at anything or post anything. I think I was just looking at YouTube, maybe. I don't know. A lot of it I just put together in my head. Like I said, I just was like, well, people are doing some things where they're combining watercolor stuff with papers that they've collected. There was some vintage paper type of stuff that I saw. So I was like, I have a bunch of papers and I know how to do the watercoloring. And I was just about starting to get bored with watercoloring. And I wanted to try and figure out how else I could do watercolors without following like a video tutorial and all that stuff. So that kind of was like the next step for me, just to try and do some watercolors on my own, paint some things that I saw, not like plein air, but just not having a full tutorial. And also I got to use some of the paper, because that's a whole huge thing. If I collect things, I have a really hard time parting with it. And then I feel like I have to try and use it. So
So
I
junk
did.
journaling must have felt very intriguing for that part of your personality, because you were probably like, hey, maybe I could figure out how I can actually use stuff really creatively.
So I was really into kind of the vintage junk journaling part of it, where you're collecting vintage books and old ledgers and old photos and stamps, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's what I wanted to do, more of that. And then that's why I wanted to get rid of some of my just pattern papers that I thought were out of date, which, but not vintage.
Right, just the stuff
So
that's like, from the 2000s or something that,
yeah.
right, the patterns, the colors, the patterns, they just start to become dated. That's like really normal.
Yep. So yeah, so that's does that connect a little
It does.
bit
Okay, so
better? Okay.
you looked on YouTube, you found junk journaling, and you start making books, which is new, right? You'd never made handmade books before.
Nope. So I just looked at YouTube tutorials And they were making books, so I was like, I could make a book. So I started making books, and I really loved making books. And so this all happened right about when the pandemic started, and my kids were just like, they had thought that I lost it. They just were like, I don't know. They were walking around saying, I don't know, I think that this whole pandemic has hit mom the hardest. She's
Because of the bookmaking?
just because I was collecting everything. I was like collecting
Yes.
trash. I was like, don't throw away that envelope. I'm gonna use it. They were having to ask me, like, Mom, can we recycle this? Or do you want to keep it? Or like they would make tea and they'd be like, do you want my used tea bag? Or like, is it okay? Yeah, they and I was saving avocado pits because I was learning about avocado dying too. I mean, it's just like, you know,
Everything.
you learn about one thing and then it leads you to this and then it
Yeah.
leads you to this. So I was getting into all of it and my kids were like, this is not any sort of craft that we know of. Not sure if we should be concerned. So yeah, I was just getting into, you know, coffee dyeing and avocado dyeing and collecting all the recycled materials and things. So yeah, I just liked it because I could do the sewing. I could sew part of it. I could paint, I could watercolor. I could use some of my old papers. I could just use trash or whatever was around the house. So yeah, I just thought that it was a really good way just to combine a bunch of stuff that I already had that I could use. And I don't know, it was fun.
So we met because students in the Willa Journals course. I think you were probably one of the earlier students.
Yeah, I think I signed up that day
That
that you.
is so funny. When you saw that I was doing a course on a type of junk journal, but you were already making junk journals. It
So I
wasn't
was,
like you
yeah.
needed to take my course in order to learn how to make a junk journal. So, what was it about my course that made you think, oh, I want to purchase this and actually do this?
Yeah, so I was making junk journals, but I had just started getting on Instagram and seeing things on Instagram. And one of the first things I saw were your Willa journals. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's another thing I can put into these journals. I know how to quilt. This looks like quilting. I have a huge stash of fabric, and I had just taken all that stuff down to the basement too to be sold in a garage sale. I was like, what am I going to do with all this old fabric? So then when I saw you using those, I immediately grabbed them back and I was like, okay, I got to figure out how to use this. And right about that time, you were like, I'm thinking about making a class on how to make these Willa journals. And I was like, yes. So it was just like by chance that I saw you and was interested in this at the same time that you were putting out this course. And I think I was, you know, I think I signed up that day. It was like January 1st or in January was when you were going to start the class, right?
Yeah, I started it on a January 1st. It
Yeah.
was like
And
that was my goal date for when I was
yep.
gonna, have it ready to go, or at least enough of it ready to go that people could start
Yeah.
taking the class.
And I remember going, okay, I don't have anything to buy this year. I'm not spending any money on vacation. I'm going to take a class. That's going to be my Christmas present. And then later I was like, I'm going to take all the classes. But anyway, that is the first, the Willa Journal class is the very first class that I bought. relating to, any journals or books or anything. And that really got me started on making this type of journal. And it was like the whole class really took my love of mixed media and the whole mixed media world, because I had just started Instagram. I didn't know anybody. That just like took it to a whole new level, because I started meeting friends in that group, in the Facebook group, and then I started wanting to share on Instagram and making friends on there. And then I think after I had made my first or second journal, I was like, or someone asked if they wanted to do a journal swap with me. And I was like, sure, that sounds fun. And then I met a couple friends that way, doing a journal swap and learning a little bit about each other so we can make a journal for each other and make it the way we, we each wanted it, and put the types of things in there that they liked. And it was a really good way to connect with people. So yeah, I just loved just being able to connect with other students and the learning part of it. And then I don't know if you had intended in the course to put out like 12 different classes in the one class, but it was just like the different classes just kept coming, right? You had like a watercolor class, and then a
I had a bunch of mixed media, a bunch of mixed media classes. So what happened was, for me, a really big part of making these journals that I gave that, the funny name, the Willa journals, a really big part of it was that it was an ability to take whatever you were having fun with at the time,
mm-hmm.
and then incorporate it and elevate it into a functional object for people to love. So you may have heard me talk about this maybe on other podcast episodes or on someone else's podcast episode, but I was really struggling with what was I going to do with my enormous desire to create things. Like, I'll just give an example of just something that's super fun to create, that it's like, why am I making this stuff? So like mixed media tags are really fun to create. And I could list 25 other things that are super fun to make, but it's like, well, what am I going to do with all these tags? Like, I wouldn't want them to post. I don't have enough people to give them to in my real life. I don't even know if anybody in my real life would even give a crap. You know what I mean? If I gave mm-hmm. them a mixed media tag. And for me, the journals were a way of taking anything that I felt called to make and incorporating it into a functional object that other people, they could understand more. And in fact, there were people who wanted them, they wanted to buy them. And mm-hmm. so it's kind of like, it was my way of like honoring that part of myself that just wanted to make all these different things that all these different people are out there, demonstrating and showing on Instagram and all of this stuff. And it's like, oh, I really want to try that. And it's like, it's okay to try it, because I can try anything and most likely it's going to end up in a Willa journal. So things like snippet rolls, things like, making dyed papers, like whatever it was, I could do it guilt-free. I could collect avocado pits. I could go to, vintage yard sales and just whatever, all of this stuff. And I could do it all without feeling like that feeling of, why am I collecting avocado pits? Why am I going, why am I buying vintage ledgers? It was like everything could be rolled up into those journals.
Right. That's exactly one of the reasons why I loved it too, because I was there was a purpose for all of this stuff that I had collected. And also, it was like, I don't know, I felt like I learned almost everything about mixed media that I know from those classes too, because I mean, I knew a little bit about paper dyeing. I had done a snippet roll, but not the paper snippet rolls and not the way you do it, which is really, really cool. And the messy papers. I mean, I don't know that I had done anything like what you did in that class. And I remember I did it, and it was another one of those things where I was like, I was doing it, and in the middle, I was like, oh, I don't know if it's supposed to be working out like this. I was getting a little frustrated. It was challenging, and then kind of worked through it. And at the end, I was just like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And what I ended up with is like, I mean, it looked kind of crazy. Until I write, I mean, they are called messy papers. But like the whole experience of like, I was like standing up and I was, you know, splashing all the paint around and using all this stuff. And it just like felt good. It was just like a full body experience where I was like using all my large muscle groups and then afterwards, like I cut it all up and it looked awesome then.
Right,
But
that's
it
the
was,
magic of mixed media art is the cutting, is when you start basically converting things that you've made.
And I think that was like the first time that I really was into, you know, had any sort of exposure to like that type of mixed media. So.
That's where it starts to transition, I think, for me at least, and it sounds like for you, into, okay, this is the fodder part of it. You know, this is like now we're talking about you had that experience of creating something that is like a unique paper product that is, you know, completely unlike anything you've ever created before. And that for me is where I started to catch that bug of this is really fun to create collage fodder, and this is almost like a hobby in and of itself.
Yeah, speaking
Even,
of fodder,
yeah,
go
even separate
ahead.
from, you know, even separate from making paper because I'm going to put it in a journal, it's like, oh, I really enjoy this process of making fodder. Well, it's funny that we call it fodder. I do not know who first started calling collage fodder collage fodder. It's people really laugh about that term. Like people, I'm sure over time have called it just collage papers, or I don't even know. It's only I think pretty recently that the term collage fodder has become more popularized, because fodder is something that like it's like a farm terminology.
Yeah, people have looked it up and been like, I'm not sure if this is what you mean. It's like feed for cattle.
Feed for cattle. I don't know where I first heard it, but I guess I was just like, oh, that sounds about right. It's collage. And it's just anything you
I
can
never
use.
questioned it.
I never questioned it either. I was like, okay, I guess that's what people are calling it. So, okay, so then tell me, how did it passion for making journals turn into your interest in collage fodder?
So let's see, my sixth Willa journal that I made in the course had to be a journal for the 100-day project, because I had heard that the 100-day project was coming up, and I had heard of that term before. I was like, I'm gonna do it this year. I don't know what it is, but I'm gonna do it. So it's 100 days. I'm gonna make a journal. It's gonna be, 100 pages. And I really got into that whole 100-day project. I liked the repetition of it and everything. And then when I was doing it, I saw that you were doing something with fodder. And I don't know. I guess I just didn't question what fodder was. I was like, well, if Wendy's doing something with fodder, then I'll do fodder. And you were doing the 100 days of fodder, right?
100 days of collage fodder, which
100
when
days of collage fodder.
I didn't know what I was going to even do. I was just like, I really like collage fodder. I have
Yeah.
no idea what I'll do, but I'll just make posts, kind of talking about collage fodder, photographing it, making new stuff, using stuff. I had no idea.
Yeah, and I didn't have any idea either, but I was like, okay, I'll do it. And like, I think in my head it was a little bit different than what you envisioned, because I think you were just like, make fodder and take pictures of fodder and record what you made. And in my brain, I was like, make fodder, use the fodder, and like show what you had made while you were using it.
So
So
were
you
you
can.
thinking more like art journal pages where you're using fodder?
Yeah, so I was making a lot of fodder, but my goal was to make it and then use it too.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's why, like at the end of the 100 day or towards the end, I saw a lot of posts about people saying, yeah, I have all this fodder. I mean, piles and piles of fodder, and I don't know what to do with it. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know what to do with it? Haven't you been using it? I didn't quite understand. And
It's funny
that's
because I think I just assumed people would know what to do with it. Like, I
right.
think I just made like a dumb assumption. Like, because why else would you be interested in making it in my mind? Why would people even want to make it if they didn't know what to do with it?
Right.
I was
Or
thinking they
maybe.
already knew, but maybe people were just like, oh, making fodder seems like fun. I have no idea what
Yeah.
I'll use this for.
Right. I mean, making fodder
Maybe.
is fun,
It
but I
is.
was always like, use it. And maybe people were using it, but I mean, I was collecting a lot of fodder too. You can't use it all, right?
No, you use really a relatively small proportion of what you make.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's when so the 100-day project had ended, and I was like kind of bummed because I needed that repetition of like, I would get up in the morning, what am I gonna do for the, whatever day it is of the 100 days? And I was kind of missing that. So one morning I woke up and I
Just
was like,
FYI,
I
that's very normal to have like a really big let day project.
Oh yeah. Well, it
Well,
was
that
my
was my
first
fourth
one,
one,
so
but
oh,
I've done
okay.
four, and it's like you finish it and then you feel really lost.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I did. I definitely felt lost. And I was like, there's gotta be something more. Yeah. So that's, I woke up one day and I was like, I need a challenge or something. Like, I need something to do every day for a while. And then a few days later, I woke up and I was like, I don't, I get all my brilliant ideas first thing in the morning. So I woke up and I was like, I'm gonna ask Wendy to do a challenge with me because I know Wendy would know what to do. And so Wendy, this was as much as I knew about doing a challenge. I was like, if I can find a hashtag that hasn't been used, that hasn't been taken, and I can use that, then I have a really great idea. So I knew I wanted to do something with the fodder, and I knew that people were kind of having a hard time knowing what to do with it and stuff. And so I thought, we need to have a challenge where we just use fodder. And should I tell them about the big coincidences that led up
Yes,
to, okay.
definitely, definitely.
Well, it just sounds so contrived. It's like there are so many coincidences that I possibly can't be making it up, right? But
Just, I think
it's gonna
it's, look, it's,
sound like it.
no, just say
So,
what happened. It's
okay.
crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy 'cause all right, so Allie Manning, right?
Yep.
Allie from Vintage Page Designs was having you on a Facebook Live or something where
Yeah.
you were going to talk about how to sell journals. And the crazy thing was, I was like, hey, I just sold some of my Willa journals. I kind of wish I would have known what to do earlier, but but I already did it. I'm going to watch it. During the live, you mentioned that I had sold the journals, and I was like literally jumping up and down, like, oh my gosh, Wendy said my name. I was like, it was surreal. So, and you know, I mean, if my kids think that I'm famous, you're just like superstar. So I was like really excited about that. And that was the morning that I had gotten up and thought, I need to do a challenge with Wendy. I'm going to ask her. And then while I was watching the live, I was actually doing some painting. I had just bought
Conrad.
Kelly Wynn Conrad's one of her color classes, and I was just doing, I had watched it, and so I was just doing some painting, I was doing some color mixing, and then you had said something about Kelly Wynn Conrad too, like her m color mixing classes are so great. And I'm like, this
Oh,
is
that's
really weird, this
crazy.
is super bizarre, because I mean, I wasn't doing a great job of following what she had taught, but I was learning a lot of things, and I was just going off of her videos while watching you guys, and I was just like, there are too many coincidences here. I'm gonna have to definitely talk to Wendy about this idea that I have. So I think it was immediately after that, or pretty quickly after that. That I messaged you, right?
Yeah, you either messaged me or emailed me, and you were like, I'm thinking that I would like to start a challenge, and I have found a hashtag that hasn't been used.
Yeah. See, that was the
And
important part for
it is
me.
important. It is important. And then you were like, would you be interested in doing this with me? And my immediate re reaction in my own mind, I don't know if you know this, I can't remember if I told you this. But my immediate reaction was, I do not have time for this.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but I thought that that's what it was going to be. I was like, okay, you know what? The worst she could do is say no, because I know you're a busy person. And I was like, I'm just going to ask anyway, because that seems to, oh, I know why it was that I asked. Because during that live, you said something about doing collaborations,
Yes.
and you had talked about how you had seen other people doing collaborations, but
Oh,
nobody had
right.
asked you to do one. And I
This
was
is a
like,
big part of the story is,
yeah.
yes, is because I talked about how if you want to do collaborations, you just have to ask people because you could sit around forever waiting for people to ask you to do collaborations.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you just have to go for it. If that's what you want to do. And then you went for it,
I did. I was
which
like,
was
okay, all the signs.
exactly what people should do. And my, you know, in my mind, I was like, I just cannot take on another thing. And then my next thought was, I really want to do this. This feels really right. It feels really natural. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell Tiffany that I'll do it, but she has to do all the work.
Yeah, no, I think
And
I
I'm not going to do
agree to that.
anything.
I'm pretty sure in my first email, I was like, oh, it's going to be super simple. You don't have to do anything. You just. I've already found the hashtag. You just have to
All it
make.
takes, just a hashtag.
I was just. Yeah. I just said, all you have to do is use your fodder. I mean, you're gonna do that anyway, right? How hard could that be?
So that was your
So,
original idea, was just have people use fodder
yep.
and use the hashtag. And of course, my once I say yes to things, my the wheels in my brain, they just start turning and turning and they don't shut off, which is what you've now experienced. It's
Right.
like the you basically got moto.
Oh.
Got Wendy.
In the way.
But then I
Yeah,
was
then
like, Tiffany,
you're
you should
like,
do this. You should do that.
why don't you invite a bunch more people? Was great. It was like, this is exactly the type of things that I go for too, you know? Like if it was just, did you hear that?
No, what
Oh,
happened?
my, I think my earbuds are dying. So
Oh my gosh. All right, we can't let your earbuds die. You
I
know,
know.
okay, you can just switch and you can just talk into your phone. Like you can just hold your
Okay.
phone and it will
Yep.
record beautifully
Okay,
if your
I'll do
earbuds are
that.
dying.
Yep.
Okay. So it's funny because I don't go into things intending for them to like snowball and get as big as they get. And then it's like the universe just downloads information about possibilities. And then I just follow like where the universe goes.
Yeah, I mean, you have some really great ideas. I mean, that the fodder challenge idea, where it went was just fantastic. I
It
mean,
was fantastic.
yeah, and I could have never, dreamed up all of that by myself or done it. I was just like, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I'll do it.
But I don't take credit for these things either because have you ever read Big Magic?
No.
Oh, there's a book by Elizabeth Gilbert called Big Magic, and it explains like the metaphysical properties of ideas. And I just, when I read that book, I was like, this book really speaks to me because this is what I have been experiencing for a very long time regarding ideas. And I know that ideas don't come from me, they just go through me. And sometimes I have to give my ideas to other people and say, hey, I've had this idea and I think this is an idea for you. And you can act on it or not act on it. It's up to you what you want to do with it. And then some of the ideas I have to hold on to for myself and say, I want to try to bring this one to life. So when you asked me to do the fodder, it was like, even though my intellectual brain was saying, resist, 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 you shouldn't take on any more responsibilities, my emotional part of me was like, this is exactly what you want to be doing. And when we were kind of in the middle of Fodder Challenge, like I knew that this was not the end for me. And then I think I said to you, or maybe I said to the other women who were like, I'm having some more ideas coming through.
Right.
Does anybody want to be a party?
Yeah. So then tell me about that part, because that's like the continuation, right?
So that's the continuation. So I just had this very strong feeling like this was definitely not going to be the end. And then I was just like, this is something that, it's so much of it is selfish in many ways. It's like, as much as I put myself out there as a teacher, I am still very, very much like a student. And I create the experiences for other people as I would like to have those experiences created for me. So this is exactly what happened with the Bookmaker Collective. I basically created a concept because it was the concept that I needed in my life. And that has been beautiful and wildly successful. And with fodder school, it's like, this is what I need. I want to be on a journey that lasts a year. I want to make fodder and use fodder and then repeat and make fodder and use fodder. And I want to learn from a lot of other artists about their favorite ways to make fodder and their favorite ways to use collage fodder. And it just seemed really, really natural. So when I came to you and I was like, I have this idea for a year-long course, would you want to partner with me on this? What were you feeling?
Yeah, I felt like, first of all, when I thought that you said you had an idea, I was like, yeah, let's, I don't know. I remember having a different idea that was way smaller. Right? Like, how it happened before. And then I remember hearing your idea and being like, whoa, that blows my idea. And it's like I get a little inkling of, something that could go beyond, and then you just have this full-blown idea already, and it's great. And I don't think it's selfish for you to want to create a course that you would want to take. I mean, like, if you're creating courses that you wouldn't want to take, that's
Right, that would be a little crazy, but
yeah.
it's like I think that probably some people who create courses maybe teach from a place of like, well, I know this thing really well, and therefore I feel very confident teaching this thing.
Oh.
And for me, I mean, there are definitely courses that I do on my own that aren't collaborations where it might be like, oh, I have this thing and I feel really confident and I could teach this thing. But it's different with a collaboration because it really does come from a place of, me wanting to be a student as much as I was a teacher in that
Right.
thing.
Right. You still want to learn part of it, and you still want to be challenged too.
Yes, I want to be challenged.
Yeah.
I want to learn. It seems like a whole hell of a lot of fun. It seems like, I mean, there's definitely like repeating themes, collective and fodder school of like, I can see how if you choose to go through this as a student, then by the end, you will really have taken your game up like many, many levels. So with the Bookmaker Collective, it's like you're taking your bookmaking skills up a lot of levels, like your creative bookmaking. I don't mean just like book binding, because it's really not a book binding
Right.
experience. It's like bookmaking, it's like creative bookmaking. So for fodder school, it's not, I mean, there's definitely going to be a few books made during the year in fodder school, but it's not primarily focused around books. It's focused around making fodder and then using fodder in a lot of projects. And I just feel like there's so much potential in that concept for developing people and their artistry in a really personal way. And I see that it's like things like textures and colors and motifs that are very people that they can carry as they go. And then I could see how it would kind of like snowball into that the projects that people make throughout the year would be more and more like identifiable to each person, if that makes sense. Like where people's styles could really start to emerge. Not right. in a contrived way, not in like, I feel like I have to have a style and therefore I have to choose what my style is going to be and stick with it. Not at all like that. More like you weren't even trying, but your style emerged.
Yeah, I love, I mean, the teachers that we've chosen to do the fodder school, they're all so different and they each have their unique style. And I think that, you know, as we and as students take the classes, like you'll get the style of each teacher, but also you'll put your own into it. And then as you collect all of that fodder from the previous class, you can use it for the next class.
Exactly.
And then you gather more and use it for the next class. So it's going to be like a continuation. You're going to see kind of a progression of your style, of the things that you're creating. And, you know, it's going to influence, like what you make at the beginning is going to influence what you make at the end too. So yeah, it's definitely going to be your own style into it.
I am really excited.
Me
I just,
too.
I think it's a really cool concept.
It is.
And, if you're listening to this and you're still listening, then just know that we're going to be releasing this podcast episode on a Monday, and then in a few days, so on Thursday, which I believe is the 14th, don't quote me, I'll make sure I get that right, is when people are going to be able to begin enrollment for fodder school. So fodder school is not going to begin. The courses are not going to actually begin until the beginning of October, 2021. So we're going to give, you know, all the back to school moms a chance to catch their breath after their kids go. And the classes will begin in October, but the early bird special price will be in the second half of July, 2021. And then if you miss that opportunity, you can still sign up all the way up until we begin the course in October. So all through August and September, you'll still be able to enroll. And then enrollments will close the end of September and the class will begin in October.
Yep. So the 15th, July 15th will be the pre-sale.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for correcting that. And there's 12 different teachers. And if you go on Instagram to our hashtag, which is fodder school, you will be able to see who's using the hashtag fodder school. And all of the teachers have identified themselves by using a graphic that says, I'm a teacher at fodder school. And if you choose to enroll in fodder school, you can use our graphic that says, I'm getting my degree at fodder school, because this is really going to be like a master's level in mixed media art, maybe even a PhD level degree program in mixed media art. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that we want to say about fodder school before we call it a night? Because this is the longest show up or shut up podcast episode ever, but it deserves it because really like your story is so in line, I think, with all of the people that are part of this community and that are attracted to us as collaborators and, you know, friends on Instagram. It's just, it's a community of people that have all scrapbooked and knitted and quilted and done all of the things and watercolored. And now we, you know, love mixed media art. And I you're so part of that crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like I can stay on this craft art for a really long time because it combines all of that. I mean, you know, even if I find something else, I can still be combined into this. I'll still find it into a book.
I feel like it will keep evolving. Like, I can't guarantee that I am going to make books, you know, every day for the rest of my life, but I know that it's what I'm passionate about right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that I am allowed to follow my passions.
Yes. One other thing we might want to mention about Fodder School is that we have 12 teachers, but there are actually going to be 24 lessons.
Yes, we should talk about that. So do you want to describe the format of Fodder School?
So the first lesson from each teacher is going to be a lesson on making fodder. So just making fodder, and it can be, it'll be like one main type of fodder. Like I'm going to teach watercolor and some different techniques that I do with that. But other teachers could do like three different types of fodder, some really quick ones, some lengthy ones. So that's going to be the first class that's released. And then in 2 weeks, they're going to release another class, another lesson that's going to be what you can do with that fodder that you've made during the first class. So it'll be a longer lesson. Mine's going to be should I tell what mine is going to be?
Sure.
Okay. Mine's going to be the organizer book. It's going to be called Fodder Keeper, but it's that extremely organized book that people might have had a preview of in the Fodder Challenge. I'm going to teach how to make that book to keep all the fodder in that you make as you go throughout the year. So two lessons from each of 12 teachers, plus two bonus ones, right? Maybe? Are they lessons? Maybe just two bonus content we'll talk about.
I didn't forget about the bonus content. There's going to be a content leading up to Fodder School where we talk about some themes that you might want to carry through Fodder School for yourself if you choose to dive in. Yes, I did not forget.
All right, well, that's a lot.
So there are going to be, what I wanted to say is there are going to be a few teachers that are books, but the books that will be taught are very varied in the types of books that they are. And then there'll be teachers who are teaching more like wall art type things. There's going to be Megan Wissner Quinlan is going to be doing focal points for art journaling pages. Artist trading cards. So Sarah Gardner, if you guys don't follow her, she's incredible. She literally like makes some of the best artist trading cards out there. So it's going to be a wide variety of experiences during the year. It's going to be really cool.
It is. I'm so excited.
All right. I think that's all for today. You've been a wonderful guest. And if anybody has questions about Fodder School, how can they reach you? Oh, let's talk about this. Tiffany, your Instagram account is Tiffany Simply Sharp. Sharp is spelled Sharpe. And if people want to email in with questions about Fodder School, how can they reach you?
They can just email me directly at hello@tiffanysimplysharp.com, or you can go to my website at www.tiffanysimplysharp.com. They will be able to check out the links that we'll be putting out on pretty soon, right?
Yeah, so the links for signing up for fodder school are going to come out on you said Thursday is the 15th of
The
July.
15th.
Yep. So
Yep. And yeah, if you just go on my bio on Instagram, you can find my email address and all that stuff there.
beautiful. All right. Thank you so much for coming on,
Yeah,
Tiffany.
thank you for having me.
Okay, we'll talk again soon.
All right.
All right,
Bye.
bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Show Up or Shut Up. If you've made some art or craft while you listened, take a photo of it, post it to Instagram, and tag me at willa.wanders so we can see what you are up to. And if you feel like what we've talked about here spoke to you, press that subscribe button so that you're the first to know about all of the new Show Up or Shut Up episodes. Have a wonderful day and go make something.